When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and you're listening to your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And that's Stand By Me by Benny King. Mike Stoller, who co-wrote this song, was born this day in 1933. We're about to have a conversation with Arle Prilo, who is an amazing woman, has a degree from Harvard Divinity School, and she's producer and director of this new film that she's working on called The Psalm of Howard Thurman. And you know, over the years, we've done a lot with the work of Howard Thurman. So when we heard Arle was coming to town, we had to have her in the studio to talk about this work and what she's doing and Howard Thurman and more. And welcome to the studio. It's good to have you with us.
Oh, thank you. So wonderful to be here and to meet you and to be able to share a little bit about Thurman and the work that I've
done. So take us backwards a little bit, how this came to you, this work of Howard Thurman, and why you were pursuing this. Because did you start out as a filmmaker?
Yes. I grew up in California and went to the University of California at Berkeley, and I majored in communications with the desire and aspiration to tell stories, particularly of African-American figures. And so that's been basically my life's work. Started in local television and then moved more specifically into documentary filmmaking.
But then you ended up in Harvard Divinity School.
Mm-hmm.
How did that happen?
Really as part of a way to powerfully acknowledge that the work as a filmmaker, the work that I do, is ministerial, that it's really about cultivating and nourishing the spiritual life of people who watch it and view it, and also to acknowledge ministerial gifts in other ways outside of filmmaking, but really to kind of formally say, this is why I do this work, and this is the work that I want to do to touch people inwardly. So
is that something that was always part of what pushed you and motivated you in your life? And then was there kind of an epiphanal moment that brought you to Harvard Divinity School after years of working in media and communications?
Well, when I started to work on the film, I did it with the real intention of doing films of people of a spiritual significance. And in the case of working on the Howard Thurman film, got me more attuned to, oh, yes, what I do is mm-hmm. is this kind of work. So aside from the desire to do films of spiritual significance that came after, I would call this pivotal event in my life where I was involved in a head-on crash, auto crash with my daughters, and thought that, with the time I had left in life, because my life was spared, I really wanted to do work that mattered. And Howard Thurman and his life and the desire to tell his story was always on the back burner with me. And so after that moment was when I decided to do the film. And in the course of working on the film came this recognition that it had ministerial import.
I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here for our listeners who may have heard the name and maybe have not heard the name Howard Thurman.
Mm-hmm.
And just let's talk a bit about, why you were so attracted to his work and just who he was, kind of lay out very simply who we're talking about here.
Okay. I'll try both ways in terms of being attracted to his work. Even though I grew up in California, I had never really heard of him. In fact, I had gone to school in the Bay Area, and Howard Thurman's name wasn't, on my radar at the time. But I had moved to Atlanta, Georgia, at the very beginning of my career in the late 70s, and, recently after finishing school. And ended up at Ebenezer Baptist Church.
Mm.
One of the first jobs I got there was working in the office of John Lewis, who was running for Congress, and everyone who would come through that office, that campaign office, was a member of Ebenezer. So I said, okay, let me go where the people are. And so that was, and it's just funny when you look back on your life in these little threads. But anyway, I ended up at Ebenezer Baptist Church, and the pastor there, Joseph Roberts, would always quote Howard Thurman in his sermons. And so that, in a sense, tuned me to this name. And because he was quoted in such a profound way, and I don't know the exact quotes, I decided to go look up books and find out who this man is. And so I went to a bookstore near the Morehouse campus, and there was Meditations of the Heart, a book Thurman wrote. And it was a collection of meditations that he used at Fellowship Church in the 1940s. So those meditations had just a way of just kind of reaching right into my soul and just kind of articulating, you know, my yearnings. And he kind of says, feeding the hunger of my heart at that time. And so I just, you know, I says, well, who is this guy? Where did he come from? And so then his autobiography with Head and Heart was just published at around that same time. So I got a sense of the story of this man born in Daytona, Florida at the turn of the 20th century, who just really had an aspiration to live a life worthy of life itself, and the kind of groundbreaking things he did in terms of traveling to India and meeting with Gandhi and being the first African American to do that. His starting Fellowship Church was a real pioneering venture in San Francisco in the 1940s, the nation's first intentionally interracial, intercultural, and in many ways interfaith church as well. His coming to Boston University and being a groundbreaker in terms of being the first African-American dean of a predominantly white campus. And then his inspiration on many of the civil rights movement leaders there. But throughout
like
the
King
book,
himself.
like Martin Luther King Jr. himself, and in the film we talk about that, but we also talk about James Farmer as well, whom he taught at Howard University, and other people kind of give voice to his influence. So it was King, but it was other people. So just kind of seeing the scope of life. But for me as a young person, as a person starting out, it was just this kind of drive and consistency of living this life of faith, but also amidst all of these societal obstacles in a land of people who didn't value his significance, even as a little boy. And I used it, in a sense, as a template for my life of how I would like to live my life in terms of being kind of grounded in this faith and using that to answer whatever call has come my way. And as he did, he had this sense of unity of human life and this way of speaking to those with their backs against the wall. Those were his kind of driving, they call it his working paper. So.
We've said in the show before that if Howard Thurman had been white, well, he wouldn't have been Howard Thurman, but if Howard Thurman had been white, he would have been acknowledged as one of America and the world's great theologians original thinkers. He seems to be missing from the canon all the time for most people.
Right. I think he's sometimes one of the treasured, great God, the best kept secret, which is the most revered and most treasured figure. So there are people who know him if they were in certain circles and were able to hear him. He wasn't one who was about self-promotion and making himself out there. So I think a lot of the knowledge comes from his sense of, you know, not really being his own publicist. But I think a lot of times, yes, it can be, we can say race, you know, and people just kind of not understanding him as well because he did move to the edges in terms of religion. He wasn't.
What do you mean by that?
I call sometimes he doesn't use the, I don't know if you call them politically correct words in religion or the doctrinal ways in terms of speaking of Jesus in a certain way and ways that traditional religion will always kind of box you. He was always trying to move beyond those walls and encouraging, and that was the other thing that I was attracted to him as a young person, someone who was really kind of pushing those edges, societal edges, but also those in religion as well. So because he really wasn't someone you could box and put in a category, then I think it's sometimes hard to kind of grab that and market that and make that, you know, the name to listen to. But I think right now with there's this the quote, the keep alive quote that's being do what makes you come alive quote that's being quoted a lot by this a newer generation. I think they're starting to get a glimpse of who he is, not who he, you know, who he is in his background, but at least the name is still out there. And he's always he continues to be quoted. So I think in this new age, his name will have new people will be much more aware of him, and that's part of the work of the film, is to bring a broader awareness of the man behind the quote and the pithy sayings that people get in there.
Right.
here in the news, or
because I can the pieces that we've talked about your film, the little pieces that I've been able to see that. Because there was a quietness, there was a real presence, but a quietness about Thurman,
mm-hmm.
Howard Thurman,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
In his demeanor, in his way, even his way of speaking,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
much less fire and brimstone, a kind
mm-hmm.
of,
mm-hmm.
you know,
right.
He was a very quiet speaker, but there was so much depth and power
right.
in what
right.
he had to say. He didn't have to scream it.
Right.
Nor did he want to scream his own name.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right. Right. That's a great way of looking at him. And so that's always been the challenge in the film, is to be able to get those nuggets of him and to communicate that. He was a different person. He wasn't, you know, a quote, you know, a typical, we call it from the black pulpit that people
right.
see, but he was still there and he was still very present.
Which is why I guess it seems like in some ways you're approaching it almost, approaching his life almost in a meditative way. That's the feeling I got,
mm.
you know, that is a meditative man, and you're also the film you seem to be producing is also meditative. It's a
mm-hmm.
meditation, I
mm-hmm.
should say.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. The purpose of the film was to share his story. To share his wisdom, particularly around building community across these barriers, but also give people a sense of his presence in voice, but also just in the aesthetics of the film, and do it in a way that is engaging, that won't, you know, have people taken away, but kind of draw people into him in a visceral way. And so a lot of the stuff maybe won't be spoken or will be spoken, but there's still a sense of him. And what he meant and what he was about.
You know, I was thinking that as I was looking at some of the old pieces of Howard Thurman, reading some Howard Thurman over the weekend a little bit in the last couple of weeks since we last spoke on the phone, and then looking at pieces of what you were beginning to put together for this film, where I'm going to talk about what you're trying to do with the film, that it struck me that he was Howard Thurman, as you say, in the film, as a grandson of a slave,
mm-hmm.
and I gotta put this. I'll put this in the right way. That Howard Thurman was his kind of thinker and theologian that understood where the power of spirituality lived within an enslaved people that could teach America about itself and about life,
mm-hmm.
right? That was
right. Right.
At
right.
the same time, he understood the power and the pain. He wanted to bridge that in ways that brought people together across the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So some people see that as a contradiction. That's part of what America's wrestling with right now, you know, that he did in such a very different way.
Yes, he didn't. And it's funny because I don't think he really saw it as contradictory. I think he saw it, you know, there's a tension in that, but he also mm-hmm. saw it as kind of the one journey, because one of the things we talk about, he really wasn't, you know, people say, well, he was, you know, these deep meditations and this inward journey and things that foster your you know, your spirit. But then there's this outer, you know, physical fight against injustice or whatever.
Which he had in
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right,
deeply.
Right. And what he saw that they were all about relationship to God, you know, what he considered the divine, and they were all divine imperatives that things that we wrestle with in terms of how we deal with one another isn't just about people. It's about that's how we were wired, and that's what we were wired, and that's how we were born to do, is to be connected and to be in community. And if that wasn't happening, then we were violating God's will for us. And also just in the sense of relationship with God, too, and the meditations really foster that. So it's all part of this whole spiritual thing. So, and that's one of the emphasis we put in the Ground of Hope, which is the section of the film that deals with Thurman in the Civil Rights Movement. And it was really reminding leaders that this was a spiritual quest, you know, this whole fight. It was more than about bills being passed and mm-hmm. laws being changed. It was really fulfilling a kind of a spiritual imperative. So he really, you know, he saw them both as part of the same stream of fulfilling who we could be, our best selves, and who we were created to be. So to him, it was part of the same piece of moving through life.
Because he saw, when you talked about the speech he gave at Harvard University,
mm-hmm.
I don't think that to me, I'm so glad you hit on this point. I mean, in your film, you're hitting on this point, because that's something people, that's part of the conversation about the spirituality and spirituals that come out of the black church and come out of the black world,
mm-hmm.
that he saw in a profoundly different way than most people think
mm-hmm.
about,
mm-hmm.
in terms of their power to teach the rest of the world, the mm-hmm. power to teach where that suffering comes from and what that means.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, you know, and it also says to him about his, the way he could see things by studying all these religions and understanding these different paths. He could find things I think other people couldn't find.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was believing, yeah, there was a truth that not one single faith tradition has a hold on, the truth that there's something very universal about a truth that all have access to. And at the same time, he saw there was something very rich. He was never about people forsaking or leaving these paths. You know, there was something very rich, and that he always would say, if you go down deep into your tradition, your faith, your whoever you are, you'll come up into the other person, you know. And so our quest is to always go deeper and deeper into who we are, what we believe. And when we kind of hit that kind of core, we'll find ourselves connected with someone else. So it wasn't so much a kind of going down to put you apart. You know, it was always going down, because that's when you, again, get into the truth of what you're believing.
Right.
You'll find that. And so the thing that I really appreciated, and, you know, another, what you call agenda in terms of, was to kind of, and he kind of faced that too, in terms of the spirituals and his generation, because he was part of this kind of the 20s and this new consciousness of going out. And people were saying, these are sorrow songs, these are songs that tied us to the slave. He says, no, these songs are about some strength, you know,
right.
To keep us moving through. And so that was part of his innovative work as well, was kind of putting a new spin, a new way of, new insight and way of wisdom of looking at the spirituals. But also for me, it's in a sense like, you know, for my grandparents and my grandparents' parents or whatever, you know, to kind of embrace the kind of wisdom, the spiritual wisdom that came through them, and not to, you know, push them aside and say that was just for your time. But there's still something we can find for our lives today in terms of existing in a space where you're not, your life doesn't matter. You're considered significant. And that can be universal, not only black folk, but it could be everybody. There's a space sometimes where who you are isn't seen special. But Thurman had this way of kind of putting a finger and making everyone feel worthy and a child of God. And a lot of that came from the teachings of his grandmother, a slave, and from the religious and the spirituals and the music and the art of that generation.
I mean, it's an interesting sojourn you have. He takes from being the dean of the chapel at Howard University, and at that point still called the Harvard of the black world,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And going to San Francisco to open this church, and out of, with nothing. I mean, we're just mm-hmm. going.
Right. I appreciate that about him. Him, and that was the other kind of lesson I was gleaming at, even as a person studying him, was this sense of call, and if something's laid on your spirit, and
mm-hmm.
you know, to move forward on it, even though it's foggy and question marks and things aren't there, but there is this. He had sensed something at the Khyber Pass when, and that's another piece we talk about in the film, where he needed to come back to America and see how he can pull together something where people can be united kind of under the spiritual unity. And so when the offer, or when the invitation, he says, oh, I think this might be the answer. And it wasn't like immediately following. It wasn't like he went to India and went to the Khyber Pass and 2 months later, oh, I hear it. It was like 11 years. Yeah, 11 years. So sometimes those things, to develop, when you have this sense of call, sometimes it takes some preparation time or wait time before you can really accomplish it. And so that was, something that stuck with me.
What was it about Khyber Pass?
It came at the close. It was the timing, because it came at the close of their trip to India, where they had traveled throughout and spoken at a lot of college campuses. They were invited there by the student Christian movements of India, Ceylon, and Burma, that's what they were called at the time, to kind of give expression to African American faith. They had heard a lot of Christianity and about Christianity from missionaries, but they hadn't heard from African Americans themselves why they had become Christians. And so it was part of his journey, and they were invited to speak to these colleges throughout India and kind of give voice to why. But he was, at every turn, he was questioned as to, why are you Christian when the main lynchings and mob lynchings are coming right after church services?
Right.
So why do you adopt that as a faith? And a lot of times he made a distinction, I'm about the religion of Jesus, and really following the life I believe and the faith, of Jesus, seeing Jesus as a historical and as a man, and Jesus's sense of commitment to following the will of God. And Jesus being part of a disinherited group. And so kind of taking from that and just really, moving that. And he also gave lectures around the spirituals, the faith of the American Negro, and featuring spirituals. So anyway, there was always a lot of questioning going on. And he had also the conversation with Gandhi. And so toward the end of the trip, he and Sue, his wife, went to the Khyber Pass. It then was the passageway between Afghanistan and India. And they saw these camels going back and forth across the pass, and he was just seeing that there was something. And I almost feel like I'm reciting the film, but anyway, because it's like a song. But anyway, he saw something in people kind of exchanging who they were and what they brought to each other across this path. He saw these camels doing that, and there was something about that the timing of it after his speaking around and also just the location, and just sensing that when he came back, there was this vision that when he came back, he would have to do something in the sense of showing the highlighting the positive things in terms of Christianity, in terms of being a bridge building faith, in terms of bringing people together, who can exchange their various gifts, and just in terms of kind of living out his faith in a way that's less exclusive and more inclusive. And so that was what he kind of held, that he would like to do that. And so it was always kind of churning in his mind after he returned to Howard, because he was a professor at Howard at the time,
right,
that this would happen. But it wasn't until Alfred Fisk in California sent him the invite.
The Presbyterian minister said, come out here. We want to start this new interracial church no one's done before.
Right. Right. And he was really just asking for an intern. But I think Fisk, some people say Fisk was really secretly asking Howard Thurman, and he just didn't overtly say that. He was just saying, can you suggest a person? But Thurman, in a sense, picked up on that and said, this, and he and Sue as well, because Sue was also part of that.
His wife.
Experience, yes. So,
and you actually got to interview Sue Thurman.
Oh, yes.
His wife.
That was special. And it was really, I guess, toward the last 2 years of her life. This was 1994 or 1995. Yeah, she was the first interview for the film that I did, and she was a grand. She's worth a whole film herself.
Yes, I'd say so.
But and she really, the thing that has kept me going is her. Putting her hand on my head and saying, "You're the one to do this. I think you have the spiritual kind of sensibility to do that.
How does that feel?
Oh, it's kept me going, really. It's kept me because I've had to rely on that.
So you've been working on this film for 20 years?
Over 20, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
It's, so this is a passion. This is something that you think has to be told. This film you're calling The Psalm of Howard Thurman, right?
That has to be done, and I'm the one to do it. And I've just felt a sense of call, and just as, you know, the Khyber Pass piece and Thurman's life, you know, he talks about commitment and the importance of commitment, and the quote that really attracted me to him in the first place for Meditations of the Heart is, as long as a man has a dream in his heart, he cannot lose the significance of living. So it was almost as if to say, and I was following that as a, you know, aspiring filmmaker, you know, if there's something in your heart that you have to do, you know, the road, the journey of it is going to just bring so much light, and it'll be worth that, you know, the pursuit. But it has to be this sincere commitment to do it. And I've had that.
Yes, you have.
Throughout this work. And the journey and the people I've met along the way. Interviewed, I was just looking at a clip I did of President Barack Obama. Even before he had considered running for president, we had gotten him and he talked about
when he was
Thurman.
Still a senator?
Yes, he was still a senator. Yeah, he was thinking about.
And you talked to him about Howard Thurman.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And he shared that the significance of Howard Thurman in his life as well. So yeah, it's the range of people.
Because this film, Howard Thurman, you know, left us in 1981, born in 1899.
Mm-hmm.
You know, went to Boston, was the head of the chapel of Boston University.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
First black person to get to be that.
Mm-hmm. For predominantly white universities.
So, predominantly white, thank you.
Yeah.
So now you're still raising funds for the film and pushing and trying to finish the film, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll give people information about that at the end. It'll be on our website as well so they can go to that.
Great. Because we like to be a really collective effort, just as Thurman crossed the barriers in terms of who he reached. I want to do that for the film, but also in terms of who's a part of, who buys into this work. So it's my commitment to have, you know, the $10 and then the, you know, $2 million. So it's not, you know, you give what you do. But anyway, go on. I'm sorry.
I just wanted to, the film, I mean, you clearly see this film on the life of Howard Thurman, The Psalm of Howard Thurman, as you're calling the film.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That something that generations in the future and now, young people who have no idea who this is, need to see and understand what this man has to say for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thurman has been called both timely and timeless, his words. And I take that as this film, too. It's something that can speak to our times now. And it's also to our times, you know, in the future. So definitely, and that's part of the crafting of the film is to make it something that's not just I saw it. But people, even Thurman, you can go back and read him, and there's something new you can get,
right,
you know, with each new read. And so I see the film as that as well. It's something that people can treasure now and use and see Thurman's words and how they're applicable to them. And then they can put it on, you know, in 10 years and 5 years and 2 years and see and feel something totally different. And that's how it's been for me in making it, too,
so
as well.
So where are you in the film process now? How close are you?
We're between what we call physically between the rough cut and the fine cut. So that means we've shaped the film. We have all the material. And now it's refining with editing, you know, making it cleaner,
editing
sound.
And sweetening, getting it done.
Right. Also, voiceovers, because we use a lot of correspondence in the film, and you know, getting actors to read that, so to record that, and we have this marvelous score, music score. Joel Goodman has done that, and Emmy Award winning producer, and so you know, to get the orchestra because we're really, I really wanted organic and not really kind of synthesized kind of film, a real different way of approaching a documentary to not. particularly, you know, strictly factual, but something extremely visceral, and I'm orchestral sounds will do that. So getting the orchestra and that kind of thing too. So we all that needs the money, you know. And
yes.
Right now, as I speak, and it might change tomorrow, it might change in 2 days, but we're about $300,000 to finish the editing, and then we need to clear the rights. And because, you, as you saw, we have a lot of archival material.
Yes, lots of archival material.
Used in that as well.
So. Well, I can't wait for this finished product.
Oh, I can't wait either.
I can't wait
to share it. Yeah, to get it out to the world.
And
yeah.
I'm glad you could come by Baltimore and do this, and we'll put all the information on our website about how to touch base with you and where to go to so that they can contribute and see what's going on and see more about
Great.
The film itself.
Okay, well, thank you. And thank you for this opportunity to share.
As soon as I heard you were coming, I wanted you here. Oh. And Arlie Prelow is the producer and director of this wonderful film, In Spirit Communications, The Psalm of Howard Thurman. Welcome to Baltimore. Thank you for coming by.
Oh, thank you again, Mark.
On our way to break, we're hearing The People by Common. Common was born this day in 1972. Happy birthday, Common.
This is street radio for unsung hero. Riding in the Rego, trying to stay legal. My daughter found Nemo, I found a new primo. Yeah, you know how we do it for the people and the struggle of the brothers and the folks. The lovers are the dope.